Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Can I blow your mind with Please. A life comes at you fast? It's August. How in the name of God did August go this fast?
I guess the word of the day is fast.
I don't know.
Wasn't yesterday or 2 days ago, July 30th? How did this happen so quickly?
I just remember, it seems like last weekend was Memorial Day weekend.
It's just been the fastest month.
Has been.
I don't know why.
You know why? It's Caleb Mania.
Hey, everybody.
Goes a little faster.
You're not, is that it?
There's not dog days of training camp. We're not dreading the breathless reports.
I can't believe he's in his third year.
I can't believe. Yeah, I know. Wasn't that a great Pro Bowl season when year two? Season three of Caleb Williams has begun.
The Bears.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw. 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Anybody in Chicago can take the L. But what they really want are W's.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Have you dried out, Mr. David? The rain came pretty torrentially.
Morning, Mully. Yeah, happy Wednesday. That was unexpected, the cloudburst Tuesday night. I don't think anybody was quite prepared. Certainly not at Guaranteed Rate Field, but throughout the city,
I think it was something else. We're missing the story. I mean, the guy is on a pitch limit. So, yesterday it was only four.
I don't think that was part of the explanation.
Okay.
I don't think there was any explanation. That was a bad
decision.
Bad night.
It was insane.
Yeah.
You started. It was already raining, and then it got rained out like literally four pitches in.
Four pitches in.
Now you got a 7-11.
7-11 is when they delayed the game. The game started at 7:10. It lasted 1 minute. They suspended it. The Sox will play a doubleheader today. Garrett Crochet won't pitch.
How could he?
He won't pitch. He shouldn't pitch.
No.
This is a doubleheader now. I don't think that kind of weather was in the forecast, certainly not on their radar,
right?
So to speak. They thought they could get in an hour of baseball. In retrospect, it looks kind of silly to have started at all, especially with a pitcher that you're taking such good care of, trying to be cautious with. Go out there, throw four pitches, and then call it a night.
Yeah.
Wasted Crochet night. Wasted day.
That's what it is. That's it.
I feel bad for the fans, those still paying attention. I feel bad for the people who went out to 35th and Shields hoping to see Garrett Crochet because he's one of the last things worth watching.
Yeah, listen, it's a rough one. I don't want to get too caught up in it because I do think it was a surprise. You know, it was amazing. By me, it hailed. It hailed for about 5 minutes. I mean, not like a really long time. But, man, there were chunks of stuff coming down.
Well, I couldn't believe it. You know, I was coming out. I did television last night, so I got out of there a little bit later and was coming home and did not expect to see rain.
Yeah.
And it was all of a sudden very, very ominous when you walked outside around 6:45-ish, 7 o'clock.
Boy. You're right in the heart of it.
And started to feel the winds blow a certain way. And like, wait
a
second.
You're going by Comiskey as they're stopping the game.
So did anybody
the sell or the guaranteed rate, whatever it's
the rate,
called.
The rate. I don't know. Is predicting the weather become so difficult in this town? I mean, do we miss skilling that much? What's going on?
We may have ruined the planet. I'm not quite sure, but it seems like there's weird weather events all over.
Well, it certainly spoiled the plot last night because Garrett Crochet throws four pitches and now we won't see him for another 5 days. If we see him again, wouldn't that be terrible if this is the way the season ended?
Is that it? Now they Brian Bannister talked for half an hour and kind of explained what the plan was. And it's the kid wants to keep going. They're letting him go, but they're limiting his innings. Obviously, four pitches prevent him from pitching today, but I'm sure they'll limit.
I got the sense after hearing what Brian Bannister had to say, he's well-respected throughout the game and certainly in that organization, but I got the sense that if this weren't one of the most accomplished starters in the league this year, even despite the numbers, then I don't think they would be treating this the same way.
I agree.
They're giving him – this is a nod to his leadership and his moxie and his competitiveness. They're trying to strike a balance here that's a very difficult one to do.
The, well, how do we put it? Cut down day, you know, ended a lot of hopes and dreams and all that. I'm not suggesting it didn't, but it lacked, or it, you know, there wasn't the same drama, surprise, slash, oh my God, that guy's gone.
Well, I think that's good. I agree. You want to get to the point in your organization where you treat these cut down days as unfortunate developments for some people's careers at the bottom of the roster, but you're never going to anticipate this with any kind of real suspense because you're set. This is what you want. You want to be set in your aspirations, your goals, your expectations, because nothing that happened yesterday should affect anything about 2024, really, your season, in theory. Bottom of the roster decisions are difficult for the people who are affected the most.
Sure.
But I don't think that typically, I don't think they're sweating these kind of things in Kansas City or Baltimore or San Francisco. In Chicago, it's a bigger deal, and it has been traditionally because those are the kind of things you're waiting for. Who's going and who's going to be available on the discard pile?
What was fascinating is I believe they're on Hard Knocks. They had a nice shot of Ryan Poles thinking. He was sitting at his desk and he was thinking about the roster. And they said something along the lines of, you got to think a lot about this. Like, it was really a funny moment because he clearly was considering the roster.
No doubt about it. Oh, that's probably, he's got to feel a sense of relief this morning, even though his work is just beginning. It's got to weigh heavily on some of those executives who are making decisions that they're changing the course of some people's lives.
Yep.
Yeah, it is. You want it to be insignificant for your football team, generally speaking, but it's not insignificant to those people who got the worst news of their careers yesterday. And if you are one of those members who of the Bears who are no longer a member of the Bears, yep, today's a tough day.
Well, today you hope the phone's ringing. You hope your agent's on it and you're getting another opportunity elsewhere. That's kind of what it is. There's also going to be a lot of re-signings for the practice squad. Oftentimes, you know, with 16 spots, I guess you get 17 if you have an international player. With that many spots on your roster, you are prone to take guys you know, guys that you've watched. There might be some guys at the end of the roster that you really like and you don't want to give up on them. And I get it. It's open season and everyone can do that, but it's you will usually see teams sign a lot of their own players as opposed to just going outside the organization.
Well, they know them. They've invested time and money in them already, and they're willing to do that again by paying them to stay on the practice squad, which isn't a bad way to make a living if you're a rookie, if you're an undrafted free agent. You just want to be in camp. You want to be in a locker room. And there are stories, and more so than before because the practice squads have expanded, but there are stories of guys who have lingered on the practice squad for a season or two or part of a season, been called up and taken advantage. So the Bears have to hope that they have a lot of guys who fit that description and are going to be guys who, Micah Baskerville, for instance, he had a very good camp. I'm not sure what else he could have done to make this football team. Is he going to be somebody that, you know, goes to the practice squad and never gets another look? He'll probably play some football this year for the Bears, but it'll be more strategic. It'll be because of attrition, and he'll be back and forth kind of yo-yoing between the practice squad and the active roster. Not a bad way to make a living, but I'm sure that he felt like yesterday was bad news.
Yes, the guys on the practice squad, generally speaking, depending on their experience, make for the year, if they stick 225 to as much as 383 for a year. That is a good living. That's a good job. Problem is, you're on the practice squad. You're not playing. You're not on the active roster. But, you know, if you're injured, as you're pointing out, you're getting a regular salary. You're getting an NFL salary, and the minimum there is like $750,000.
It's a big difference between the two, certainly. But if you are a practice squad player, it's the equivalent of an entry-level position in other professions. So you're coming into the league at the lowest level, at still a pretty good starting salary. You do have to do some rationalization maybe to justify being satisfied with that. You're never going to be satisfied with just being a practice squad player, but it could be worse. You could be on the outside looking in. And the fact that these guys can go to work tomorrow morning after they set the practice squads today, it's an apprenticeship. You want you want to do the best you can, turn some heads during practice, and still get better at your craft. So for a lot of these guys, it's still an opportunity, and you keep that dream alive. And all these guys, you know, obviously have the dreams of being NFL players or NFL stars, and now they can still do that.
I would be careful about calling and saying I made the team just because there's going to be another roster move or two coming.
Always a danger.
They're going to bring back Kerry Blass in game, right? We know that.
Yeah.
They've already said that, and they're going to have to sign a long snapper. They currently do not have a long snapper on the roster. So it'll be very interesting to see how they handle the fact that Patrick Scales will not open the season with them.
Well, Patrick Scales won't probably be available until October.
Yep.
They're going to have to find somebody they trust. They are in the process of finding who's going to be available, who's out there. Kerry Blassingame likely will be added back. That's a roster manipulation I don't quite understand in terms of what they're trying. Who's
getting cut?
Who's going to be the odd person out, and why would you not just make that move yesterday when you're setting the final rosters?
Yeah, my fear is that maybe they're going to put somebody on IR.
They might be waiting for some more information medically, right, or make a move that way.
Right.
That could be the case. Those are going to be some things to watch. That's why if you are, you know, say, Daniel Hardy, or if you're somebody else who has celebrated making the roster, and we're going to talk about, oh boy, can you believe they made the roster? And then tomorrow it's be like, can you believe they got cut?
Yeah, I know. That's my point. So, I just don't call home.
It's still, you know,
August weekend.
It's a long weekend.
You got Monday off.
And, you know, August 28th, you still have how many days until the beginning of the regular season, week one? The rosters will remain fluid until then.
September 8th is week one for the Bears.
That's a long time.
There'll be a Thursday game, Friday game. I think there are even Saturday games. Am I right, or is that
college? I don't think there's a Saturday game. There's Thursday, okay. Friday, Sunday.
Thursday,
Saturday's reserved
Sunday,
for college
Monday.
Football. Yeah. There's a lot of football
college
going on.
College football starts on Thursday because we're getting ready for the Thursday NFL schedule.
Get into condition. So you start conditioning your brain to be watching football Thursday through Sunday.
There are some good games Thursday. There are definitely some great games over the weekend in college football.
No doubt about it. It starts for real this weekend.
It's
looking forward to that.
I can't wait to see some of these teams.
Yeah. You know, as for the Bears, back to the roster,
right.
I think that when you look at what they did with a couple people specifically, you know, Larry Borum being on injured reserve, he can return in four games. I'm a little surprised by that only because of his salary. I really thought that when you may have a $3 million salary and you have an injury in the final preseason game, sometimes that translates into injury settlement or somebody who is, you know, left off the roster or put in a, you find a way not to pay him what he's owed.
Yeah.
But he is valued, apparently. And I think when you have the lack of depth maybe on your offensive line, it shows you that a guy like Larry Borum is valued. So that was a little surprising. There were other, you know, obviously people are going to be triggered by Velus Jones. We'll talk about that and that decision and what went into it.
Right.
Dante Pettis going in injury reserve, didn't expect that.
No, he's done for the year. He didn't get the return designation. It's it. He's
that
gone.
Still bothers me. I every
that
year.
He's around or that?
No, not that he's around. I think obviously if he were healthy, he would give you at worst somebody who could catch a punt and not fumble or muff it.
Yep.
I've never liked or quite understood the decision on August 28th that if somebody is injured, you have to make a decision that affects them for the next 18 weeks. And I just wonder about your determining.
So you think that they all should get the designation of return?
I would like an explanation why that's not the case.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I think the answer would be that the league is so awful and so desperate to win and so looking for half their roster would be on injured reserve. You know what I'm saying? You keep players and you'd hide them with a return designation. It just means I get another month.
Well, I think you'd probably have to have a cap of those. You know, right. You could probably cap the number of players.
That's what they do. That's how it is. I think it's 8, right? That you can bring back, something like that?
Yeah, they do. But I just find that very – it's a drastic decision. And it's got to be – it's got to be just so – you talk about guys who received bad news yesterday. I would think that it would be just as bad to find out that because you were injured or have an injury that might not be something that lingers beyond 3 weeks to a month, all of a sudden – You find out yesterday because of that, you're not going to be playing anytime this year.
Yeah.
December, you're free.
Yeah,
you're going to be in the organization. You're going to be rehabbing an injury that's already healed. And then what do? You can't play.
Right.
You can't bring them back. So every year it makes me wonder why they have such rigid rules when it comes to injuries in August.
It's obviously upsetting when you see a guy that's put on injured reserve, and he's gone for the year. It's upsetting. But, you have to be able, as a team, to talk to your medical staff, determine how serious the injury is. And if it's half the year, 9 weeks, whatever it might be, then you make a decision based on how much time you would have with the guy.
Yeah.
And then the rehab and the build back up. I would imagine his injury is more serious than has been revealed.
Probably so. Yeah, and there are all sorts of other, obviously things that are factored in. The guys who are vested veterans, guys who are, street free agents, guys who have different language in their contracts. Obviously, there's all kinds of things that are protections for the players that we understand. It's just from the outside looking in, if you're a fan, you got to kind of wonder, boy, I didn't even know he was hurt.
Did any of the – we'll get into all this stuff, but were you surprised by anything yesterday? The keeping 6 defensive ends is interesting. One of them can play tackle, so you got to keep that in mind.
Yeah, but I think that when you look at where the Bears as a roster overall, when Ryan Poles is sitting there pondering, the whiteboard and what's next, I think that when he had those moments, it probably occurred to him the weakest – depth position group would be the defensive line. And if you have a team whose strength is its defense, and that is who the Bears are, then you want to do whatever you can to make sure that you're covered. And if you want to err on the side of caution, I feel like you're going to add an extra defensive lineman, always, if you're the Bears, if you're any team. So I think that was probably a nod to that. On the other hand, I think that you have to remember what we just talked about. There's 6 defensive ends on the roster today.
Yes.
And if you're Daniel Hardy, if you're somebody
holding your breath.
You're holding your breath because you're probably going to be the first position group that is adjusted or tweaked. So what today's 53-man roster member is experiencing might be tomorrow's practice squad guy.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good way of putting it. They also have 10 offensive linemen. So that is a nod to some of the injuries. The 10 doesn't count Larry Borum, right? And the defensive line doesn't. There's another defensive lineman who's on the return list. I believe another defensive end. So you've got
Jacob Martin.
Martin, and he was kind of listed.
He'll be in the mix.
He'll be back. He'll be a part of it, but he won't be for 4 weeks. So there's a kind of 4 week tryout period, maybe for some of the defensive ends, knowing another guy's coming back, and the roster squeeze could mean practice.
And I think when you hear Matt Eberflus talk about his plan for that other defensive end spot opposite Montez Sweat, when he says it's going to be Montez Sweat and whoever has the hot hand, this is an opportunity. In baseball, it's the equivalent of trying different leadoff men or trying people in a closer role. These are open tryouts, essentially. So whoever does have the hot hand, whether it's Taylor, the new guy, or maybe it's Austin Booker, the rookie, who knows who's going to emerge? DeMarcus Walker could have quite a season. All of these players who are now on the roster look at this as a great opportunity. So if everything is fluid, that's the one thing. As much as we want to have certainty with the Bears top of the roster. You feel good about the overall talent level, better than you have in years. The bottom of the roster, these are rotational things.
There's a churning thing. The other thing is you got to remember, throughout the course of the season, they'll have guys in on Tuesdays. Tuesday's the off day. And they'll bring in guys off the street because you got to look at everyone. You got to know who they are because who knows? Maybe you end up needing them.
That's starting as early as today.
And then, today I think they'll have five long snappers. And I hope they will.
Well, I think that's the idea.
Yeah.
You know, that's the nod. That's the indication from all of these decisions because of Patrick Scales being an IR and what they don't have. They don't have a long snapper in camp right now.
Yes.
So they're going to have to add that. A lot of interesting names around the league. You saw Allen Robinson with the Giants got cut.
First of all, I mean, it was a reminder he's still in football. Allen Robinson was a real good player. I is a nice guy. Feels like he was here 10 years ago.
Well, it wasn't that long ago. And I think you're right, I guess, but you see receivers who age better than he has. And I guess at one point in time, you felt like he was a guy who was nearing the top of his profession.
That's right.
And somebody who was very highly regarded in Chicago, both as a teammate and as a receiver.
Big, strong guy, can go get the ball. Seemed like the kind of guy that would age well, frankly.
He did. Took care of himself and was pretty reliable. I just am surprised to see him cut loose on a team that needs wide receiving help.
Yeah.
The Giants. Terrell Edmonds, Tremaine's brother, safety, cut loose. I do wonder. You always wonder about
come over here.
The Bears and what they feel like. They have a high character locker room. You wonder if that connection, because his brother is a big part of this team. They don't need help at safety.
Yeah.
They don't need help in the secondary, really.
You could use another guy on the practice
squad. You never know. It's a lot of interesting names around the league. A couple quarterbacks got cut loose.
I think there were like four quarterbacks that I had heard of that were cut loose.
Bailey Zappe.
Yes. And obviously, the Bears had a guy in Ripien who people know and have heard his name, even if they've just heard his uncle's name.
Well, I think so. And that was, the decision to cut Brett Rippon loose is also a decision to go into the season with the youngest quarterback room in the league easily.
But that's where they're at, right? I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing.
I don't think it's a bad thing either. And I'm not
saying
they can
bring him back on the practice squad or they could go out and get someone. You know, Ryan Tannehill still hasn't signed.
Somebody's going to sign him, I think. I don't think it'll be the Bears. I don't think it should be the Bears.
No.
It'd be too distracting. Desmond Ridder is a guy who I think Cardinals traded for, and then they cut.
Yeah.
That's odd.
Right.
Maybe he comes back on their practice squad. So there are a couple quarterbacks out there who might help some people. But with the Bears, they're going to have three quarterbacks in the organization. If they have four, it seems redundant. I don't think that Reed is coming back, possibly. This is kind of guesswork. We don't know how they feel about the practice squad and how many quarterbacks they want to keep in the organization. But Brett Rippon would seem to have a place here.
Yeah.
I don't think he's in danger of being signed by another team.
Right.
Unless, I don't think he has 25 special days in anybody's organization for any other offensive coordinator besides Shane Waldron.
Yeah, it's funny because a lot of the cuts, the big name cuts, are guys that have played quarterback, but they haven't really done well in the NFL. Or guys like Kadarius Toney, who were once drafted high, got a lot of buzz.
I don't think you want any part of that.
But is obviously he's not a good enough player.
Bears feel very good about their receiving room.
I agree.
They've got to feel very good about their depth at that position. So guys like Toney or Schuster, I don't think are players that would interest the Bears. Maybe I'm sure they'll catch on with another team somewhere. You give guys with that kind of speed almost unlimited amount of chances or opportunities. So they'll find work somewhere. I don't think it will be in Chicago.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, I keep an eye on the NFC North. I can't help it. And it was curious to see A.J. Dillon go on injured reserve.
Yeah.
Because he's got I don't even know what his injury is. I guess he had a stinger and it hasn't been explained completely. But I love Josh Jacobs as a player, but they've moved down from Aaron Jones and now A.J. Dillon's hurt. It's interesting.
It is. What's going on in Green Bay? Also, the Lions added Tim Patrick.
Yes.
You wonder what, you know, what they're doing, because they have a way of making guys. That's a very smart offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And you figure he's going to find ways to get guys open. So they are dangerous. The Packers are dangerous. The Bears, they have to feel very good about the roster. This is as good of a roster as they have had since 2018.
The Lions cut Nate Sudfeld, which means that Hendon Hooker is the primary backup to Jared Goff. So it's just interesting to monitor that stuff. You know, like both Green Bay and Detroit kind of made interesting quarterback moves,
mm-hmm.
right? The trade for the Packers, and then
Malik Willis and Green Bay
backup. It's just interesting.
Detroit makes that move,
right?
And the Bears go young. They don't have a veteran presence in that quarterback room. Tyson Bagent right now is the most experienced quarterback in the building.
Wow. It's crazy. But, I mean, I don't have a problem with it.
I don't either.
He's not even the guy you want starting every game.
They also have Ryan Griffin, who's the kind of the quarterback coach who just most recently played. And he's a guy that they look at as that veteran presence maybe in – even though he is more of a role as an assistant coach.
All right, we got all the stories of the day. We're going to tear them all apart. Pick Six is next. It's Mully and Haw.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Pick Six, sponsored by Affinity Whole Health. Do what I did. Visit FeelGreatIllinois.com to learn more about their testosterone therapy or their weight loss options. Was Velus Jones making the roster as big of an upset as we saw on cutdown day? Do highly drafted players usually get 3 years, or was it more about speed than draft status?
It's a good question. I find it interesting. I think Velus Jones Jr. has struggled a little bit in his career, and he's an older player. What is he, 27 now? So we should see the best of him. It's his third year. You draft a guy, you bring him in, and you do see flashes. You saw some flashes of him as a running back after they moved him there. I don't know about what position he has on the field. I just don't know that you're going to see a lot of him other than returning kicks. And I think this speaks to the value of the kickoff return. And, you know, Velus is a fairly big guy. He's about 6 feet tall. And he's got some, he's obviously a speedster, and that's why you're keeping him. But I guess the question would be, if he were a sixth round pick, would you keep him? If he weren't the first player that you took, offensive player that you took as a general manager, Ryan Poles, would you be keeping him? I think that, I think his speed separates him, and I think they're going to give him the third year. You know, they saw something that they felt they could take advantage of, so you give him another opportunity. But if he ends up being, you know, on the bench all year, it'll be upsetting because you're kind of wasting a roster spot. But I totally understand that it's not just the draft status, it's the profile of the player. It's the size speed combination that can get you something out of a kickoff return. It's a pity he can't return punts. It's a pity you can't trust him to do that, and he can't be kind of a guy that you value on special teams for that reason. But that's just the reality of what it is. So see what he can do, see what the new position looks like, and move on.
I think he really needed that game in Kansas City the other night to make it. And I think the combination of what happened to Wheeler in that game also, I thought it was very interesting. We're going to talk about Hard Knocks at some point. But they were going over, you guys mentioned this in the first segment, they were going over the roster. All the coaches are in a big meeting room. And Poles asked the running backs coach, who's your third guy in that room? Who's your third guy in that room? We never got an answer. And then we went into the hole. And he's not even the third guy. Him and Wheeler would be the fourth guy.
Yep.
But we didn't hear who the third guy was, which I thought was interesting, that they cut that out. I really found that interesting. But, you know, speed, also part of Hard Knocks. You know, Eberflus giving the running backs coach a hard time a little bit, get poking, you know, oh, that was all coaching
great
right
coaching,
there.
Yeah.
Great coaching. You knocked it out of the park,
that's
right?
Hilarious.
And they had a good laugh, right? But again, it's one of those things. It's like offensive linemen in high school, right? You can't teach 6'6", 290, okay? You can't teach 4'3", 4'28". Speed.
Can't
so
coach that.
You can't coach that. So when you get that, you try to take that and you try to mold it and make the player you want out of it.
That's why I never thought he was in danger of losing his roster spot, regardless of the attention and the scrutiny and, that he gets because of what he hasn't done and the mistakes that he's made in the first two seasons are high profile. They've been costly. But he's going to get another opportunity because the oldest adage in football is that speed kills. And you have it with Velus Jones. And with Shane Waldron, you have an offensive coordinator who's going to have a fresh set of eyes, a fresh start with every player. And if there's a way that they can incorporate Velus Jones into an offense 4 to 6 times a game and get him on the field in that hybrid role and isolate a mismatch on a strong safety or a linebacker, you're going to maybe do that. He's not going to get the ball instead of the top three receivers on this roster. He's not going to carry the ball out of the backfield when you have DeAndre Swift and Khalil Herbert. What about Roschon Johnson? He might be your third guy. So I don't think that you're talking about Velus Jones taking carries or receptions away from anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But he might give you an opportunity to exploit a mismatch if you're skilled enough or savvy enough to design a play to do that against a certain team and a certain defense. I don't know if they're able to do that, but that's why he's here. He did play his way onto the roster. He is getting older, but he does have draft status protection. That also is maybe not the oldest adage in the NFL, but it certainly is true with every organization. General managers who draft players give them preferential treatment when it comes to cutdown day.
Yeah.
Look at Noah Sewell. Why is he still on the roster? He was drafted by Ryan Poles. He did not have a better camp than other linebackers who got cut yesterday. But this is what happens when you are drafted. You are given this kind of favored status, and that explains why Velus Jones is still here.
That and the number 4-3-1. That's what he ran at the combine.
Well, your first question was your best question.
Dan Weeder there, 725. He's here with Mully and Haw talking Bears. Were you surprised to see the Bears keep 6 defensive ends on the final roster? Montez Sweat, DeMarcus Walker, Daryl Taylor, Austin Booker, Dominique Robinson, and Daniel Hardy. They also put Jacob Martin on short-term IR with a toe. That means he could return before Week 5 kicks off.
I think that if I were Dominic Robinson and Daniel Hardy, I would have maybe a more tepid celebration than the other guys because their status on this roster, it would be fluid. I don't know that they're going to be here for the long haul. It reflects, number one, a need position. The biggest need position. The defensive end opposite Montez Sweat was a position that we spent the most time wondering about, and certainly when Ryan Poles is sitting there in those pensive moments and thinking as he contemplates the roster, he's like, who am I going to get to rush the passer opposite Tez? And those guys are candidates. Daniel Hardy played his way on the roster. I don't know if there's another example on the 53-man roster this morning of a guy who played his way onto the roster more than Daniel Hardy. So congratulations to him, and he will be somebody to keep an eye on. But I think what happens with the long snapper position with, you know, Cameron Lyons, what happens with that guy who's going to be tried out and who's going to be snapping the ball to Torrey Taylor and who's going to be snapping the ball on PATs and field goals, that may affect how many defensive ends end up being on the roster and in the mix. As for Jacob Martin, they have time. They have until Week 5 to figure out exactly how badly they need him. It's conceivable that they could have him healthy, he could come back, and there won't be a need. Somebody will have emerged. I hope it's, frankly, Austin Booker, but they do have plenty of other candidates.
Well, part of the answer to this question is about what you guys just talked about with Velus Jones. I mean, Dominique Robinson might still be on this roster because of where he was drafted, right? And Dominique Robinson might be the guy that is not cut first from this group when they sign, you know, is the long snapper going to take the defensive end, or is he going to take an offensive lineman spot? Because you've got, and 10 offensive linemen is ridiculous, but that's not the question right now. I really liked what I've seen from Daniel Hardy, that he's looked really good, like that story. So that's the guy that I'm personally pulling for.
It's a lot of defensive ends, and David's absolutely right. The biggest question is who's opposite Montez Sweat, and I think we know that DeMarcus Walker is going to be that guy, but he's also a guy that can move inside, and he's kind of an inside pass rusher when they get to that. So it's listen, they got one guy too many. That's the reality of life. They just have one guy too many, and they also have a guy who's injured who's probably better than the one guy too many. So, you know, don't be stunned if they end up moving a couple of these guys to the practice squad. But they obviously value them. They obviously really like them. You know, you can play around with this roster, and you can sign yourself a long snapper and really not activate him until game day, and you can manipulate and change things and move guys around on and off the practice squad. But yeah, it just seems like there's one too many. I mean, I'm just being honest about it. And, you know, we should talk about the offensive line too, but yeah, the answer to the question, I was surprised that they kept six defensive ends, but I'm not sure that that's a long-term issue.
There's a lot of questions there.
What was the best bit of injury news for the Bears? That offensive tackle Larry Borum out with an ankle injury, put on IR with the designation to return, meaning his injury is not serious enough to be season-ending. Or is it that Ryan Bates, sidelined with a shoulder injury, will not be on the IR? Were you surprised that Ross Tucker told us that he's covered Bates since high school back in the Philadelphia area and said he never saw him snap the ball as a center?
I don't know why we didn't talk about that sooner. That blew my mind a little bit, because they signed him as a center. I mean, I know they have a center, but he's on a one-year deal, and this is supposed to be your center and your center of the future. You know, you just don't want to see them go through the same thing they went through with Cody Whitehair, where you move a guy to a position and he's not as good as he was at the other position. And, you know, you just worry about that. I find it hard to believe that he never snapped in high school. Didn't he say that they won the state title like three times or something, covered those games, and never saw him snap? It's just interesting to me that they believe him to be a center. I don't know. He gives you a lot of cover. I think he's a pretty good player, but that's the better news. If he doesn't go on IR, that's the better news. That means that his shoulder injury isn't a four-week injury, and that's a big deal.
Yeah, he also got a little 10 seconds on Hard Knocks last night. Thought that was interesting. Yeah, I mean, surprised a little bit. I mean, is Ryan Bates all of a sudden going to, like, snap out of it, pun intended, and be ready for the Titans out of nowhere? And would that work that quickly? Would he and Caleb Williams be on the same page at that point? I mean, they've been in love with this guy. They've been chasing. Ryan Poles has been chasing this guy also, right? He's been after. So this guy's not going anywhere anytime soon, because Ryan Poles can't be wrong on this guy. They've been chasing this guy for a long time.
Yeah, I would. High school career in Philadelphia.
I would hope that they wouldn't mess around with it right now. Coleman Shelton has, I don't know if he's won the job or he's just been capable enough to keep the job, but he is on the job, and you don't want to have experiments in week one. So regardless of how long Ryan Poles has been enamored with Ryan Bates, I don't know that you want to play around and tinker with your week one offensive line. Not when you've had a training camp full of continuity, and they have had that. And the one thing you can guarantee, though, in any NFL season is that you're going to have a regular season full of attrition.
Yep.
So Ryan Bates offers you cover, whether it's Nate Davis or Tevin Jenkins or maybe Coleman Shelton. But I don't think you want to tinker when you're talking about a rookie quarterback who has mastered to this point the operation. Those are the things, the little things that we talked about coming into training camp. When you have the same center for a month, and my sense is that Caleb Williams has worked with Coleman Shelton longer than anybody, you want to lean into that comfort zone for your quarterback's sake. So that to me trumps anything that happened before in terms of Ryan Bates being pursued by Ryan Poles. And I think when you talk about Bates making the team, it's good news because it appears he will be healthy and they don't think he's going to be out for or unavailable for the 4-week window there. And if he is, I think he's more right now a depth piece. And then depending on how Nate Davis performs, you have options there, but I wouldn't tinker with the center.
It's a good question.
All right, that's the voice of Chris Chelios. He's talking Chicago sports at 844. So how do you think the Cubs will fare today against Mr. David's favorite starter in the whole wide world, Paul Skeens? Will they flail wildly at fastballs and look silly, or make Skeens look like a rookie and put a smile on my face?
Well, the Cubs had a big win last night. That was a big one. Dansby Swanson with his mom on her birthday in the stands, him acknowledging her. That was a lot of fun. He homers, third homer in 8 games for Dansby, so he's hot. The Cubs over 500 for the first time since May 28th. They have an opportunity today to sweep the Pirates. It won't be easy. Mr. Skeens means business. He's going to be on the mound throwing BBs, 100 miles per hour. How many strikeouts will he have? But he's not going 9. He'll only go 7. And he'll probably leave with a 2-1 lead. The Cubs, because Dansby Swanson is hot, because PCA is hot, because Miguel Amaya is scorching hot. You see, he's the first Cub catcher to have 5 multiple hit games in a row since 1996. Who's Tyler Houston, Dustin? Do you remember that guy? He was a catcher for the Cubs. I didn't recall the name. So stop ringing the bell. I'm still raving about the Cubs. They won. They're over 500. They're back. They win today.
Wow.
They win today?
They win today. They come back.
The headline's the last sentence.
Right? Yes. I just wanted to make sure I heard that right. So
Skeens leaves with a 2-1 lead, but the Cubs rally in the 9th.
With 9 runs?
Not 9.
Oh.
3-2 Cubs.
So you'll agree with, he's just a man. He puts his pants on the same way you do, right? Does he, one leg at a
no,
time?
No, he's a man, but he throws
BBs.
He's
not a machine. He's a man.
He's going to look like
he's
a machine.
He's a man,
today.
Babe.
Tell that to the Cubs. We're going to strike out 8 times today against that guy.
So they're going to strike out 8 times. Somehow they're going to get 1 run against him. I mean, you're kind of flip-flopping as we keep talking about it. Which way are we going here? Okay, so the Cubs are going to sweep, but not because Paul Skeens.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I mean, you know, again, he's a man. He's a man. He's not a machine. He's good. You heard Ian Happ yesterday. They got a little book on him. They got a little tape on him now. Okay? He can be touched. He can be touched. He's not the best pitcher that's ever had the ball in his hands. He's really good. He's really good. He's not the best. Cubs are not going to strike out more than 6 times against him today. How about that? Take that.
Yeah, he came into Wrigley Field on May 17th, and he threw 6 innings, didn't allow a hit. He struck out 11. So I'm just saying, he's now they got tape on him, so they're not going to strike out anymore. Is that Dustin's theory?
That's what I said.
Okay. Listen, the bats are alive, and that's great. And we saw them score a ton of runs and then score way more than usual runs. And now they got to get runs against a better player. I think they can win the game. I just don't think they're going to win it while Skeens is in it. So let him get his 6 or 7 innings and then come back and score 3 or 4 runs and win the game 4-2. Sounds good.
I like 4-2. I could do 4-2.
4-2 will work for me.
Yeah, that would work. I think late rallies are good.
So to your point, David, the Cubs are actually favored in this one. They're -142. The total's 8. This, of course, off of Circus Sports Illinois. I'm looking around still to find a total number for Skeen strikeouts. Yeah. I'm looking for that next.
He's going to strike out 8 Cubs.
He's going to strike out. I was going to say 9, but that's 8-9. I think we're on the same page. They're going to win 3-2, 4-2, whatever.
Okay, next question.
All right, guys. Any idea why the White Sox started that game last night? It went all of 4 pitches with Garrett Crochet throwing the 4 pitches.
Well, no. Honest to God, I mean, if you looked at the shots they were taking from the press box, some of the guys covering the game, the storm was literally coming. It was like descending upon the park. It was almost like there was a tornado funnel that was just going to land on the pitcher's mound. I couldn't believe that they started that game. I couldn't believe it ended before they started it. What was that? Why? I don't get it. You want to sell some milkshakes? I'm not sure I follow. It was weird. It was a strange decision. They're usually all over this stuff. This must have been like a huge surprise. The Sox are usually on it when it comes to calling a game or understanding when rain is on the way, etc. But, man, that was bad.
All right, so just real quick. Paul Skeens over 6.5 strikeouts.
Over.
Is minus 136.
Okay.
How about this for a fun one? Okay, you want a fun bet? You guys like velocity, right? A lot of velocity. You can bet Paul Skeens velocity on the first pitch today, August 28th. If you believe the first pitch will go at 101 or over, plus 2,000. Plus 2,000. No? Not taking that bet, David?
99.
98.
98. Okay, so under 99 miles an hour is minus 290, meaning you have to bet $290 to win $100. All right, so to answer the question, I mean, this pictures of Roger Bosser, like, oh my goodness gracious, what is going on? He actually ran out there, was helping the guys push the tarp, right? It was that crazy. I don't get it. And you guys mentioned in the first segment, that would be an unbelievable way if that's the last time we see Garrett Crochet. And even Bob Nightingale sent out a tweet saying, this is just so White Sox. You have your ace, and he's not going to pitch. He's not going to come back today, which I don't understand why, but okay. He's not going to come back today, supposedly. And now you have a chance to snap the losing streak, and you let him go out there with the rain coming and throw four pitches. It's so White Sox.
You can't possibly throw him out there today.
Why?
Because if you did and something happened to his arm, the irregularity with which you're treating this, you could be blamed forever for ruining his career.
So did he go, in all seriousness, did he go behind the scenes and like throw a sim game?
He warmed up.
No, he warmed up already, threw four pitches, called it a night.
But that couldn't screw him up? To not continue the game?
No, probably not, because they're putting a wear and tear in his
arm.
Well,
you just said irregularity. It's very irregular to warm up and throw four pitches and have your night end.
But you're not straining your arm anymore. Today would be straining your arm if you go out again. You're not straining your arm by doing nothing. Doing nothing is not going to get you
hurt.
So
he's not a machine either. He's a man.
He's not a machine. Paul Skeens is a machine.
Could Paul Skeens throw four pitches and then come back the next day?
No, you wouldn't do that with anybody. You wouldn't do that with Drew Smiley. You wouldn't do that with any soft tosser. You wouldn't do that with anybody.
Picking on a guy who's out of work.
Now you're being silly. Nice. He's not out of work yet. He's still in the dugout. I don't know if you're paying attention, Dustin. Start paying attention. So I feel bad for Roger Bosser, oddly, because I think that he, you know, The White Sox on their website has the explanation. Unexpected storms were the main culprit for the start of the quick delay, according to the White Sox.
it kind of dings him a little bit, right? Roger Bosser.
He's very rarely wrong.
Right, I'm just saying. But now he was wrong with like two exclamation points wrong.
Is he the Tom Skilling of groundskeepers, or is Tom Skilling the Roger Bosser of weathercasters?
Listen.
I don't know.
This season is now a complete disaster because even Roger Bosser got caught up in it.
Who can you trust anymore on the South Side?
They hung an L on Roger Bosser.
The sod father. I feel bad for the sod father. Great guy. Great job.
Great man.
Last night, I think it's just a quirk. Mother Nature hates the White Sox.
Undefeated, even. Right? Mother Nature undefeated?
I thought that was time.
Father time. Also undefeated.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
With college football talk heating up this week, you heard it during transition yesterday, hot, 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 and Illinois opening tomorrow night, then Northwestern and Notre Dame starting on Saturday. What are you most looking forward to, or is it too early and too crowded on the sports calendar to even care?
It's never too early to start caring about college football. I got fired up talking to David Braun on Football Night in Chicago. He's talking about finding an edge and talking about an identity and playing in a way. I just love that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I love college football. Illinois opens on Thursday night against Eastern Illinois. They better win that game. Northwestern has Miami of Ohio at the temporary makeshift Lakefront Stadium. They better win that game, even though Miami's tough. They're coming in hot. They're defending MAC champs. I don't think you underestimate them. And as John Greenberg tweeted out, you're really not a full-fledged Northwestern coach until you have lost to Miami of Ohio. So that's going to be tough for the Wildcats. I hope they win with both their quarterbacks playing. But the biggie, I know it's only Wednesday, but Notre Dame and Texas A&M down in College Station, Texas, on the field in front of the press box that sways because the fans are so into this. It is a crazy atmosphere. I've loved covering a couple games down there. I can't wait for that one Saturday night. And I think Notre Dame is going to...
Ooh.
I think they're going to win on the road. They're Holy overrated cow. At number 7, but I think they pull off the road victory against the Aggies.
That's bold.
So it's $65 is the cheapest ticket I'm seeing. But I'm curious. Molly, have you walked down there? Have you walked down to see that new temporary Northwestern Stadium yet? Can you get close enough?
I have not.
Because you've talked about riding your bike in that area and walking.
I used to ride my bike there all the time.
I'm curious to see that in person. It looks really cool.
I don't know how they're going to get people in and out.
Right?
It's a hard... You got one road in and one road out. It's like Green Bay.
I mean, I think you should ride your bike there, honestly. Or walk.
I think you should walk over and report back on Tuesday.
What if it rains?
Yeah. Well, the problem is...
Unexpectedly.
The problem is I'm probably going to drop my college student off in Boston.
Sorry, I forgot. I forgot about that. Yeah.
I'd love to go to that game.
So Mully and I had a really good conversation about Notre Dame, David, on the way out of here yesterday, and something I picked up reading. Yes, we do read. The 5 expected starters on Saturday night for Notre Dame's offensive line have a combined 6 starts. That's not good.
Yeah.
They have a true freshman starting at left tackle. That's a nasty place to play. Texas A&M is ranked. They do have a lot of money down there. Defense travels. Notre Dame's going to be pretty good on defense. This quarterback's supposed to be something special. Maybe he can get them through that. But this offensive line, I don't think they're going to be able to ground it, run the ball down anybody's throat. It's all about Notre Dame's offensive line against Texas A&M's defensive line. Game's at 6:30. My wife the other day said, oh, we're going to go out to dinner with so-and-so and so-and-so on Saturday night and take the kids. I said, well, that's great, but wherever you guys pick to go, they better have a TV or I'm not going.
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand that. I think it's going to be a ton of fun. I'm looking forward to the Notre Dame game. Really want to see USC LSU. I saw Brian Kelly interviewed, and he did not sound Cajun.
But that's Sunday, really quick, Molly, for those people tuning in. That's this weekend. You get a Saturday. Yep. You get Sunday. Even get Monday
6:30
games.
6:30
right?
Night.
Yeah, you get some all weekend long.
Yeah, that's. But David, when you said that, when you were leading into the game, I thought you were going to go Clemson Georgia, because I think that game is a huge game. This could be the beginning of the get the hell out of here for a certain head coach at Clemson. Maybe I'm just projecting, and maybe I don't like that guy, Dabo Sweeney, but I think he's going to run into problems this year because he has not embraced the portal. He hasn't gone about the NIL stuff, and I just feel like Georgia is loaded. And they're just going to beat the hell out of Clemson. And we're going to, come away from it. I don't think anybody can get eliminated when it's a 12-game playoff or 12 teams, rather, in the playoff. I think there's plenty of time left in the season. But I do think that there's a first cut that happens where, you're going to die by 1,000 cuts. And that's the first one if you lose on the opening game of the season. It's just like what happened at Notre Dame with Georgia Tech beating Florida State. Number 10, were they? Florida State? They were a rated team, and they lost their opener in Dublin. And I think it's fascinating to see how this is going to go and how many teams are playing their best football late and how they're going to get into the playoff, even though we don't expect it. So I think it's a really special season. I'm looking forward to it. All right.
Can't wait.
That is it. That is the pick six. We've got the extra point next, and it's football related. Football, football, football. Mully and Haw on the Score.
And I know we're down and everybody's throwing dirt on us, but if Clemson's a stock, you better buy all you freaking can buy right now.
Score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Was it extra difficult to watch Hard Knocks last night, knowing several of the featured players were cut earlier in the day? Did you find this series somewhat boring? Is it a case of the Bears not giving the producers much and it's starting to show?
Everybody's going to have different tastes in TV shows. I wouldn't presume to tell anybody what to like or not to like. I enjoy Hard Knocks. I really didn't care yesterday if the players that were being featured, I knew they were getting cut. I felt a little bad for Adrian Colbert, who they were focused on, had the terrible accident as a kid riding mm-hmm. his bike and had the zen-like moments, and I knew he was getting cut. I was okay. I felt awful for Wheeler, and you look at what he went through and what he endured in getting to the point where he was one of these guys that would deferred med school. We knew his story from Howard and knew everything about Ian Wheeler's life and his past. And his mom was mic'd up for the Chiefs game. His mom then was there. That hug at the end, if that didn't get you, I don't know what you're watching. I don't know what you're waiting for. I don't find it boring. I don't find it hokey. I don't care about some of the things that people will feel like, well, those are touristy Chicago moments. It's a TV show, and it's highly entertaining. Hard Knocks is executing it to the point where the production value, very high. And even though that we're looking at this as sports fans, cynical NFL people who are accustomed to seeing the Bears and trying to be, or not trying to, but feeling disappointed in what they're giving us. I don't think this is that. I think this is a really good infomercial for the Bears organization. I think it's represented them well. And I can understand why people want a little bit more behind-the-scenes stuff, and people want profanity, they want this or they want that. I have not found myself being one of those people.
So thank you for saying what you did about Ian Wheeler. I totally agreed about the mom and the embrace and the mom being there. And if you ever played sports at any level, how important it was to have your parents at your games and how important it is as a parent to be at your kids' games. So if you've got some fall sports coming up and they start this weekend, do yourself a favor. Make sure you go out and see your son or daughter participate because it is important. Now, my favorite moment of the night was actually Tyson Bajan's dad in the arm wrestling thing. Now, I almost need to watch it again because I don't know if you picked up on this. The guy, so then they get into the game. So it's like the night before the game, there's like an arm wrestling tournament at a local bar. Place is packed. Tyson comes in, watches his dad. Reminded me of the over-the-top scene where the kid is watching, his dad, Sly Stallone turn his cap around and beat the other bald-headed guy. Was that guy that he beat sitting next to Bajan's dad during the game?
I don't know.
So it looked like they were like friends and foes kind of and then yeah. friends again. I need to rewatch that part of it. The storytelling is excellent. I'm glad they gave us a little bit of that farcus or fight, whatever you want to call it.
Practice. From
practice fight. That was good. I'm glad they gave us a little bit of that. That was pretty cool. Where it got a little like laughable, but it did make me laugh. I guess that's the point. Make the audience laugh. Austin Reed talking about the greatest teams of all time, and he brings up the 85 Bears and all the guys in the huddle. Yeah, the 85 Bears. And the 2024 preseason Bears that went 4-0 in the preseason. That was kind of funny. I don't know that we're going to see Austin Reed again, but so the storytelling's good. The camera work is excellent. This was probably, if I was ranking the episodes, my second favorite episode.
Yeah.
Before so far.
I got a text from a friend of mine who's in television, and he said he'd give it a D. He said, halfway in, I'm bored. And I said, well, they're doing a lot of storylines of guys we already know are not going to be around. And it's maybe we follow the team too closely. Maybe that's my problem. But I didn't think it was very good, Dustin. I think the production's great. I think the guys going out on the, I've done that. You go to the, is it the Hancock, and you get to stand there, or is it the Sears Tower, whatever one. I've been to both of them. People come into town, you go up there and you stand on the ledge, and you're kind of leaning forward. You feel like you're falling out of it. It was kind of fun to see that. I thought the shot they did they had them there, and then they went and they did a close-up of them and then pulled away and gave you a little flavor of what a high-rise is. I thought that was super cool. But, I mean, I'm sorry. It just, you know, I don't think the Bears are giving them much. I think it's a really high-quality production, and the people from NFL Films, from HBO, do a tremendous job. It's really well worth looking at. I was wondering why the safety wasn't wearing a helmet when he was biking, you know, after you had an accident. Don't you put a helmet on at that point? I don't know. Tough to watch the guy get hurt and his mom. But, you know, I mean, effectively he made the team. He'll get to rehab and he'll get paid for that. It's not a bad result for him in the long run, even though he's got to redo his knee, and an ACL is nothing to sneeze at. It takes a full year, but it was compelling because his mother was there and they were very nice to her, and that was good to see. But I mean I don't know. I'm still waiting for something really good. I think that even the stuff, you know, Dustin mentioned it earlier, who is your third running back? Get the answer. We know who the first three are on the roster. We know they kept another one for special teams, and we know that they're going to re-sign the fullback. We know that Bayless Jones made it. It's just, it's very strange that they didn't answer that question because they brought it up and you wanted to know what they thought and you didn't get that. So I didn't think it was great. I thought it was, you know, not a good episode, but the production level is phenomenal. And as you say, it is a TV show, so the stuff they do is great. All right. 312-644-6767 is the number. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
5 running backs, 3 quarterbacks, 5 tackles. I had 3 tight ends. And I had 6 receivers. Defensive end, I had 6. Defensive tackle, I had 3. Linebacker, 5. Safety, 4. Outside corner, 4. Nickel, 2. So 6. 24, and then 3
special guests. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That is Ian Cunningham on Hard Knocks. He's kind of breaking down the roster there. They kept an extra player from the 9 that he had as defensive lineman. Interesting.
Things changed. That was before the draft. That was before the trade.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Exactly.
They had to make some adjustments. Ian Cunningham's making the rounds, doing a little more media. Saw him on, I think, WGN during an interview. He did a couple other, did another podcast, I believe, getting his profile expanded. He's going to be ready to take over a team, my sense would be, after this season, because ready. And I think he's turned down opportunities in the past. You're seeing him a little bit more. I would expect he would be sought after if the Bears have the kind of season that we think they're going to have.
If he gets a job, because of the Rooney rule, the Bears would get not one, but 2 third-round picks. So they would get a third-rounder next year and the year after.
It'd be definitely advantageous for the Bears.
Well, it'd be rough because you lose your number one guy. You lose your trusted friend if you're Ryan Poles, but... Yep. You know, you got another guy in the league. You got a buddy that you can talk to.
No doubt.
That's good.
When you have these kind of things happen to your organization, it reflects very well on everybody in it. So, Ian Cunningham,
no doubt about
enjoy this season. He's probably on his way somewhere else. Again, that's provided everything goes according to plan. We'll hear from Ryan Poles later today at Halas Hall. We'll also hear right here on the Scores afternoon show at 4 o'clock with... I think Grody is in today.
Grody's
with Matt Spiegel.
Grody.
Caleb Williams will join the Scores afternoon show at 4. You want to definitely tune in for the quarterback. There's a lot of excitement surrounding everything related to the Bears.
No question.
The roster is fluid, but it's intact. It's down to 53. You figure there'll be a few more moves today. Mully, the one guy we haven't mentioned, which I think is a surprise, and maybe we haven't mentioned it because it's such a hard name to pronounce, but Amon Agbemiga,
yes,
is on the roster.
Yes, he is.
Amon Agbemiga is on the roster. And he is a linebacker who had one heck of a training camp. Well, and he made his way onto this team.
He's also going to be a hell of a special teamer, right?
That is it. Yeah.
That's exactly why he's on this roster. So keep an eye out for him. You'll hear his name, hopefully, quite a bit on tackles.
Well, I think that it's nice to see that kind of effort rewarded because there is no draft status. There is no favored status. Mm-hmm. There is no reason other than they like what they saw on tape. He jumped off the screen and he made the team. So is he one of these guys whose situation might be fluid? Sure, because two guys who got cut, Carl Jones Jr., I believe, and Micah Baskerville also had good camps as linebackers. The Bears might keep those guys on the practice squad. That's where you churn the roster and you get special teamers and you give guys opportunities because guys who play on special teams have to be what? Hungry to make an impression. So I think it's good for a guy like that to say he played his way onto this football team.
You know, it was super cool to see guys like Travis Kelce and Chris Jones, especially after the game, talking to some of the Bears players, talking to Flusie. It was just cool because Chris Jones telling Caleb Williams, I mean,
what you doing over there, brother?
Appreciate the respect.
What's up?
Much respect.
Didn't you find it funny before the game, the clip where I think it was it Tony who said to Caleb Williams that, man, you don't really get nervous before the game?
Hardman.
That was another moment I wanted to bring up.
Mercole Hardman.
That was funny, wasn't it?
He called you know what on him.
He did.
Yeah.
He's like, you don't
double
get nervous,
hockey sticks.
Just wait till your first game. You'll get nervous.
Yeah. Oh, he didn't like that for some reason. Do we have that too? Can we listen?
What's up, Rudy? You got it?
Come on.
I ain't gonna lie though, you might lie when you say you don't get nervous. Your first game
gonna be
in NFL, you gonna be nervous, bro.
He gonna be spooked.
For sure.
He gonna be spooked.
I'm gonna let you know. Home game though? Let me know. I love that, man. I'm gonna let you know. That means the league's watching this. Yes.
And they're reacting to it. Yeah,
of course.
It's cool.
I think everybody in the league is kind of intrigued by, number one, what's going on with the Bears. But secondly, when you have an opportunity, this behind-the-scenes stuff, this is their industry. I think it's hilarious that they called him on the fact that Caleb Williams doesn't get nervous. He's going to be nervous. And he said, I'll let you know. He's got to let him know. He'll let him know by throwing for 300 yards.
312.
There's another prop bet, right?
644-6767 is the number. We're going to get to all your calls next. Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.